Thank you for tuning in. My name is Tyron Mays, and this is The Fashion Whisperer. I'm so excited to speak with my special guest today. In the beginning of her career, she was known as The Face. Named by Life magazine, she appeared in nearly 1,000 magazine covers. She's an actress, an author, entrepreneur, and she is known as one of the greatest of all time supermodels. Ladies and gentlemen, we're speaking with Carol Off. Hey, Carol, how are you doing today?
Hey, Tyron, how are you?
I am doing really well. I'm so excited to finally sit down and talk with you and ask you all of these wonderful questions I've been wanting to ask, but I've been saving it for years, and this is the perfect project for us to get started and get into your life and see what's going on.
Well, I'm happy to be talking with you, too. You know, we've worked together quite often throughout the years, and you've put me on many of the covers that I've been on. So, yeah, I'm very happy to be sitting and talking with you as well.
Oh, thank you so much. So, look, you're one of the most successful models of our time. But for the millennials, let's just act like we don't know each other. And how did you get discovered? How did you start your career?
Well, in actuality, I was in college at the time, and I was also in the Army. I was in Army ROTC. I was hoping to get a scholarship, so we were going into summer, and I was waiting on this scholarship, hoped to get it so that my fall tuition would be paid for through the Army. I had just gotten my most favorite job ever. I was now a waitress. I was finally old enough because you had to be 18. I had just turned 18 and I had a great waitressing job. And it was at that waitressing job where I was waitering on a photographer. He came in off of the LIE on Long Island and stopped in my little steak place. And he said to me, "You should be a model." And I looked at him. I said, "No way." I had photos taken by a girlfriend's uncle, and I never saw them. So it just kind of felt scuzzy, you know. He said, no. He said, first of all, he gave me some of the best advice ever, and that is never go to a photographer's studio. Photographer can't do anything for you.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And he said, always make sure you go to an agency because you'll need an agent. So that was his first great piece of advice.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So the people that he told me to go see were all going on vacation, but I wandered into Elite on my own accord, and the rest was history after that.
Yeah, you're having a whirlwind career, which is just astounding, because you've been modeling for, what is it, four decades now, close to it?
It was 41 years June 1st.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, I can't believe it either. You know, Tyron, one of the first go-sees, that's when a photographer calls you in to take a look at your book, take a look at you, you know. So the first few months of your career, you're running around town trying to get a job, basically. And I remember one of the first go-sees I went to see was Bill King in the 80s. He did, or the 70s rather, he did the Charlie Walk. It was a very famous perfume. And and he created the Charlie Walk, and everybody knew the Charlie Walk. And when I walked into his studio, Cheryl Teagues was sitting there. Now, Cheryl Teagues at that time had a huge poster that came out of a Sports Illustrated shoot. It made her super famous. She had interviews everywhere, and I worked at a bakery, so I would read the Sunday New York Times or whatever they had in the bakery. And, she was always in there, her and Brooke Shields, and, she was sitting there. I got so flustered that I actually left my my date book there. But I was too embarrassed to go back and get it because I was flustered. So
wow.
That year I don't have a date book.
Oh, okay. Well, a lot of people don't know that you are an entrepreneur, and one of the astounding parts of your career is that you did create your own calendar. I guess you were following in the footsteps of Cheryl Teagues.
Well, Cheryl never had a calendar. She had a poster. Well, in actuality, not many models had posters. And when I approached Elite and John Casablancas, the owner of Elite, with the idea, he walked out on me. He said, "No way, I'm not doing calendars and posters and all that stuff. I almost lost one of my favorite models doing that. I'm like, well, why would you lose? Well, she was worried I made too much money. I said, John, whatever you're making, I'm making 9 times more. So go ahead, make millions of dollars off my poster. He goes, no, I'm not doing. So I basically did the posters on my own. I had to hire a manager. Back in that day, models didn't have managers. We just had a modeling agent, you know?
Right.
And so I had to hire a manager. I had to get a team together. I had to find a company who would buy it. And it turned out to be one of the most successful things I ever did, because not only did my first poster sell super well, I did 5 posters. And then every girl in the agency after that, the vice president of Elite, talked Don into doing it. And every girl after that had a poster. And then I did the same thing with calendars. I thought, what can I do next? You know, here's the thing, Tyron. Back in the day, you were done at 25.
Yeah.
You didn't last past 25. And I was already by this point 22 and 23. And I'm thinking, you know, I love my job. I want to do this for as long as I can. So doing posters and calendars for me was just a way to extend my career. And then it became a cottage industry. I did the first calendars as well. I went on to do, I think, 6 or 7 calendars. And then I did the first exercise videos. But I did my exercise videos through Cosmo magazine.
Right.
It was only available by flyer through Cosmo. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it was a time of great innovation, because the girls before us were housewives and secretaries, you know, and they would take an afternoon off and go do a shoot, make some extra money. The girls from our generation really started the new generation of models, who were girls who worked 7 days a week, 3 or 4 jobs a day.
Yeah, entrepreneurs and also moguls. Like, really, you girls created an industry and just drove it in the fast lane, you know. And it was incredible to watch your career as it continued to grow and explode and expand and go into all of these different aspects of it. So, look, you've been on nearly 1,000 covers.
So they say.
If I can just name a few, you know, Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Elle, the coveted Sports Illustrated cover.
Tyron, you know what I tell people? It's easier to name the covers I wasn't on.
Oh, I know. Okay.
I wasn't
ask,
on
what
cover?
Okay, you were. Really? I'm surprised you never did.
Isn't
Glamour.
That funny? Yeah, I tried.
But you did Mademoiselle. You did Mademoiselle, right?
I did 11 or 12 covers of Mademoiselle. Yeah, wow. I was on Mademoiselle a lot. They were very good
to
me.
And, of course, Cosmopolitan was my papa, Francesco Scavullo.
Yes.
You did. How many of those did you do? You did a lot of them.
Yeah, I did them around the world, too. So it was kind of everywhere.
Right. So what was the most outstanding cover? Like, what do you think is the one that kind of was the watershed cover that really catapulted your career?
You know, I have to – so there's different stages of a career. So different things mean different things at different times. So, for example, I was on the cover of Harper's Bazaar Italia. It was my very, very first cover. But by doing that cover, it let people know that I was a viable model. So it really kicked off my career. Then Vogue hired me. I got a Lancome contract. I was the youngest girl ever with a Lancome contract. I was 18 years old. And I brought Lancome to number one around the world, which was really great. And then after that, I think the next really big watershed moment was, of course, Sports Illustrated, because, you know, Harper's Bazaar Italia was my first cover, but Sports Illustrated was my first cover with my name on it.
Wow, yeah, that's a
That huge made the deal. Difference.
Yeah, that creates supermodel, because if they know your name in Peoria, you are a real supermodel.
Right, and then after that, you know, I started doing movies. So I've done over 65 films in my career. And I think after that, the next big, really big one for me was I had 2 or 3 covers. Actually, I think 3 or 4 covers of Variety, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, for my movie career.
Right.
I had TV Guide. I had, you know, so there, you know, there's moments in your career that are supplemented by doing something that is unique and different than anybody else can do. And as of today, I mean, there aren't even 50 girls who are on the cover of Sports Illustrated, really. I mean, it's been 50 years, I think, but some girls had two or three covers.
Yes, exactly. Now, you are definitely, you're one of the few models that made a seamless transition from modeling into acting, and also kind of finding a balance of the two where you kind of slide in and out of each one. How were you able to do that?
Well, it was, you know, you have to take yourself back to the 80s when models couldn't be actresses and actresses couldn't be models. You were either one or the other. And yeah. Because I became super famous as a model, it was really a hard transition to get into acting, even though I was a really great actress. So yeah. it was actually very hard. And the only reason I wanted to do it is because everybody said you can't do it. You're not allowed. You know, no models or actresses, no actresses or models, you know. And so for me, it was everybody said, no, can't be done. So that's why I did it. And then what happened was there were, in the 90s, people like Catherine Zeta-Jones did one of the phone companies, and Jamie Lee Curtis. I think Jamie Lee Curtis actually opened the gateway. She was in Halloween, and she had a Hertz commercial.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, here were these actors who had successful movies out who were doing commercials in the States. Before that, people like George Clooney would go to China, Japan, anywhere else in the world but America. They did
Absolutely.
Not want commercials out in America. Can you imagine? This is completely different today.
Yes, yes.
I also remember when I got my first series, I sat with a male actor named D.B. Sweeney, and D.B. Sweeney looked at me and said, oh, why are you doing a series for? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, why would you're giving in, or, you know, you'll never do movies because you're doing a series. Now there's A-list actors looking for series.
Absolutely.
Completely different time. Yeah, it's a 180 degree change, yes.
Absolutely. So speaking of big changes, you know, now social media has become such a big player in the role of the model, the supermodel, the actors. How do you feel about that whole putting it all out and letting it all hang out for the world to see, coming from an industry that was really kind of exclusive and secretive? Like, how did you make the transition, and are you enjoying it, or tell me, what do you think about social media?
I find social media very difficult, personally. I know there's a lot of people who are enjoying showing everybody everything they're doing. I come from a different era. I come from an era where the studios controlled all your publicity. They carefully honed an image for you. Now everybody's doing their own image. Everything is their own thing. They do it their own way, and they put it out there for the world to see. So it's quite interesting, I have to say, because this is not the way that I thought I was going to ultimately at some point end my career, you know, showing everything, including my underwear, out on social media, because I need to post something tonight. Oh, my God, I have to post every day. It's quite a unique moment, I have to say. Really, what's going to be interesting is, where do we go from here? That's going to be the most interesting thing.
And I can't figure it out. I have no idea what's next. Like, this TikTok thing is kind of weird. But I don't know what's coming up, you know, over the horizon. But
TikTok, they have the duets and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
everybody's dancing.
Yeah.
Even I'm dancing on TikTok, for heaven's sake.
Exactly. And Cameo. You know, people are being paid now to sing happy birthday or happy anniversary or whatever.
Actually,
it is,
I did two yesterday.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, but I don't take the money from me. You know, the money I do on Cameo, I donate to Denise's Rescue. It's an animal rescue. It's a girl who just rescues animals, and she spends every penny she gets from her dog walking job and whatever other jobs that she does paying to take care and pay veterinary bills and food and whatnot for these animals she has. So I raise money for her, and one of the ways I do it is through Cameo. I also take food. I mean, we take food up to her for the animals. I mean, she's got 37 cats right now. I've got two, and it's expensive to pay to feed them. She's got 37.
Yes. I met your cats. They're gorgeous.
How important are animals to the world? You have this amazing, you know, animal rescue initiative. What does this mean to you? What are you doing?
You know, I have to say that I think I had cats and dogs my whole life. When I was married, I had two cats and two dogs. But I was moving and shaking and traveling so much, and the dogs and cats were taken care of by my housekeeper. And if my husband, my ex, was home, you know, he would take care of them. But I got my newest pair of black cats when I broke up with my boyfriend 5 years ago. I had been with this guy for 17 years, and, you know, we broke up in a very kind of strange way. He just walked out one day and said, you know, I don't feel this anymore. I said, I'm out of here. And that was it. No tears, no nothing. And I called him up one day. I said, you're coming with me. He goes, where am I going? I said, you're coming to the animal shelter with me. You need a heart, and I'm going to take you there. You're going to, because he didn't like animals. And so for 16, 17 years we were together, I didn't have an animal. And I really missed that. And I went and I walked in and I looked in the first cage, and there up in the corner were these two giant gold eyes looking at me. And I was like, what is that? And I looked in there and it was a black cat. And like, I am a black cat lover. I mean,
wow.
They are hard to place. People don't usually adopt them because they can't see them in the cage. And sure enough, he had been there for 5 months, and the whole place went nuts when I pulled him. They were like, oh, you're adopting Paris. And I started to laugh. I'm like, Paris, Midnight in Paris. What a great name. Midnight in Paris. That's hilarious. Yeah. I said, nope, this is Sammy. I had the name picked before I even met him, and he took one look at me, and I took one look at him, and I'm like, this is my boy. It was like our soul met. And Alexei walked in, I put the cat in his arms, and he stiffened up, and I was like, meet Sam. And then after that, somebody sent me another picture, said, we know you like black cats. They're really hard to place. Can you, you know, think about another cat? And they sent me a picture of my JoJo, and I saw that little face with that hurt eye, and I was just like, oh, I just have to have this cat. She just deserves a good life. Who would hurt an animal like that? And, you know, I think a lot of people right now, Tyron, they're realizing what animals bring to their life, because we're all locked down. Everybody's depressed. And you walk in, and this animal just loves you unconditionally. And it just is, I mean, I had to bring my cats to my sister's house yesterday because I'm traveling. I'm receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award in a film festival. So I'm leaving tomorrow. So I had to bring them to my sister's house to be taken care of while I was away. And, you know, I got to say, it's like my house is dead. They are life. When you walk in, there's something living. They talk to you. They come. They cuddle next to you. You know, they just, all they ask is to be loved and fed, and that's it. And, you know, I just can't imagine, you know, anybody hurting these things. But, you know, I deal with an animal rescue, so I know that people hurt them. So that's horrible. What I'm trying to educate people, you know, to let them know how amazing animals are, to get animals adopted, give animals homes, and feed them. I mean, so, yeah, it's quite a tall order, but that's what I've been doing because my heart really, really goes there. I mean, between the raw food and health education for people, my primary love is animals.
I love that. I always said that when we pass from this world and we are going to meet our makers and we're judged, we're going to be judged as how we treated our women, our children, and our animals. you know, and what you're doing is such a beautiful thing. It's you're an angel on earth helping the animals of the world.
I don't know, maybe I'm a little devil. I don't know, Tyron. I do this because it makes me feel good, you know?
Yeah. Well, we love that about you.
Thank you, sweetie.
Before we move on, I don't want to move from this because I have a question I want to ask you, and we jumped over some stuff. But I want you to tell me about your Shoe Day Tuesday on your Instagram at Fat Model Carol Alt. Girl, do you have like a shoe fetish or something? What's going on?
I love shoes. I mean, of all the accessories, shoes and bags, but shoes, I don't know, they're just sexy. They're just fun. That you could take a plain old black dress and put a fabulous shoe, and it changes the feel. You could put a heel, you could put a flat. It goes from evening to day. I just think shoes are amazing and versatile. And, of course, they're attached to a leg, so I love legs. And so shoes and legs, yeah, I mean, I just think it's just wonderful and sexy and fabulous and just makes me happy. And, yeah, I've got lots of shoes, but, you know, I always borrow and steal shoes. But, yeah, my Shoes Day Tuesday has been shot, of course, by Ezequiel De La Rosa.
Right.
So, yeah, we are enjoying doing that. And they're just 30 seconds with a little TikTok music, and that's it.
I've even loaned you some shoes, too.
Oh, honey, you loan me a lot of shoes.
A lot of shoes.
You and I have done a lot of work together.
Yes. So, look, you do have these beautiful, beautiful legs. You have an incredible body. I mean, you know, if I can be inappropriate, you've got a great ass, okay? So look.
For some reason, it's not inappropriate coming from you because you've styled me, so.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
better than I do. Yes. But I try not to kiss and tell or style and tell, but they're going to see it in the layout because we have this amazing pair of sheer pants. And, you know, the moment I saw that great butt of yours, I said, oh, we have to shoot her in these pants. So, you know, as you guys are listening, turn to the pages so this way we'll narrate it for you. But look, it's no secret. You've been modeling since around 1979, 1980, where it really took off. Your hair is just so full and luscious. Your body is felt. It looks fantastic. We already talked about that amazing backside of yours. Is raw food the fountain of youth?
Oh, absolutely. I keep trying to tell this to people. Everybody's like, oh, what's your anti-aging secret? How do you anti-age? And I'm like, The easiest, most proficient way that I know to anti-age, to get your health back, to keep your body, to do everything you want to do as you're getting older. And by the way, for your 20-year-old listeners, you are not exempt because I know it feels like it's forever away, but man, you turn 60 like super quick. It's like one minute you're 20 and the next minute you're 60.
Yeah, you blink and you're like in a different age range.
Exactly. So I always tell people it's like what you do at 20, you start with, you know, you get your habits, the good habits when you're 20. And you get the results of those habits when you're 60.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
Yeah, raw food is the simplest, easiest, fabulous way. It's delicious. You can eat what you want. You don't have to starve. I mean, I starved as a model because I didn't understand how to eat. It's just so much information out there today. So you should not be uneducated. You should not be uneducated about how to eat. And for me, there's too many diets out there that just focus on being skinny when being skinny shouldn't be the focus. The focus should be health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, back in the day, models were a lot more healthier than they are today. I mean, you know, girls were like a size 6, some were size 8. You know, and then all of a sudden these zeros and double zeros and these girls that are dying backstage right off the runway. excuse me. What happened? What how did this shift in the focus on being overtly skinny to the point that it's not healthy? What's going on in the industry? What's going on with women? What is your opinion?
I really don't know about that, Tyron. And you would probably know better because you're in the studio with all kinds of people and you've seen the trend. I mean, I remember one time a designer friend of mine hired this girl. She says, oh my gosh, you have to see this girl. She is so thin. Like, she scares me. I said, she scares you, yet you hired her for your fashion show. He said, yeah, we felt sorry for her.
Oh,
what
no.
happens is, I think what happens, and this is just speculation, of course, but I know how it was when I was modeling. And I was a size 8 and you know, beat myself up to get down to a size 4. There was no way I could ever have been a 2. I would have had to literally kill myself. Because
well,
I
you're a tall girl.
Well,
you're
but
a tall girl, too.
Tall. They're tall and they're size 2 and 0. I don't know how
don't
they do it. But I think what happens is that they see a girl who's a size 0 get a job.
Yeah.
And they say, well, if I'm a size 0, maybe I'll get a job. Maybe I didn't get the job because I'm not a size 0.
Correct.
I said to him, this is a very bad precedent to be setting. This girl could naturally be a size 2. I don't think she's starving.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know, Tyron. There's no normal women out there in the world. I mean, one of the best things that happened, and I think you might agree with me, was the diversity.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
Not just
and
color.
Everything. And not
yeah.
just color. Body
yeah.
type.
Body
height,
type. Everything.
Features. Freckles.
And
remember, freckles were not what like kind of a considered to be a flaw. You know,
oh yeah,
I think
do you remember
freckles
Cindy Crawford
are so beautiful.
With her mole?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and they used to retouch it off, which was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, diversity in the industry is fantastic. I mean, even with you, you know, you started the dark haired beauty, you know, before models all blonde and, you know,
wow, Tyron, not many people know that. Yeah, you know, not many
well,
people
I'm an
know
expert
that.
On Carol Alt. I'm not just a friend, but I've, you know, I'm an expert. Guys, I'm pinching myself that Carol Alt was my friend, okay? This is somebody that I admired and I looked up to.
You are my friend too, Tyron, I've
got
to tell you, yes.
Thank you, thank you. But yeah,
no,
you,
but you
were
know,
the one
yeah.
before Cindy Crawford. You started that whole dark-haired beauty, American girl look. And,
well, it's very funny because, you know, when I started, the covers mm-hmm. were given to Kim Alexis, Kelly Emberg,
yep.
Nancy Donahue, Christy mm-hmm. Brinkley, Cheryl Teague. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. were all these blonde beauties. And I remember when I went into the agency said to me, well, what covers do you want? But, you know, don't get your heart set on these because, you know, they don't take brunettes.
Wow.
Yeah, when
wow,
there was somebody
wow, wow.
like Esme on a cover, it was a unique thing. It was almost like when, do you remember when Beverly Johnson was on the cover of Vogue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
oh my gosh, a black woman on the cover of Vogue.
Yeah, I know.
It was unique. Well, having a woman with brown hair or brown hair and brown eyes on the cover yeah. of any magazine was just beyond crazy. And now yeah. you have the Kardashians. Everybody yeah. looks like the Kardashians.
Exactly.
You know, dark hair, dark eyes,
change.
Dark skin, but not black. It's crazy.
Exactly, yeah. So, look, let's talk about your books, because you have, well, people do not know that, you know, these millennials have no idea how diverse your career is and how really smart and astute you are, especially when it comes to raw foods and all of this. Can we talk about your book and your several books that you've written? And what is your overall theme?
So, you know, for me, it's always been health and nutrition. Beauty comes from being healthy. So my books were about raw food. Because don't forget, when I first started writing my books, doctors used to curse me out saying, your health and nutrition has nothing to do with, health has nothing to do with nutrition. I would be like, what are you talking about? Like, how can you be a doctor and say that health has nothing to do with nutrition? I don't understand this. It has everything to do with nutrition, everything to do with it. And, you know, so we came from that in 2005 when I first wrote my book, having these doctors like scream at me to all of a sudden, you know, everybody's saying, oh, health and nutrition, but they don't know what health and nutrition is. I studied with some of the most amazing doctors in the world were my gurus, Dr. Timothy Brantley and Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, the late Nicholas Gonzalez. I have to tell you, they taught me such amazing things, the science behind what food is and what it does. It's the most It's the most potent drug you will ever take.
Absolutely.
It helps with health. It helps with nutrition. It helps to anti-age. It makes you happy. It keeps your spirits up. I mean, all these people with depression and all this other stuff, I keep saying, it's the food. You know, oddly enough, back in the day when Columbine happened, I remember I was checking into the St. Regis Hotel in New York. I was shooting a series in Toronto, and I was with my then boyfriend, who I had been with for 17 years when we broke up, the one I spoke about before.
Right.
And we checked in, and I remember being in the room, and I saw this thing on the news. And I looked at that, and I looked at him, and I said, and you mean to tell me this doesn't have anything to do with our food? I said, this is just the beginning. And
absolutely.
I was totally right.
Absolutely.
This is, you know, our bodies are very delicate, and they move in their own way, and you have to go with the way the bodies work and the way the body moves, not against it.
You have to go back to the old adage, you are what you eat, you know? And
it's
I think that's even beyond that.
Yeah, no,
I think a lot of people do not eat live food also, which is the fruits and vegetables, and that's a major problem. And the black community, the youth culture with young people don't see young people walking down the block eating an apple or a banana. And I think the result is that kids are overweight, they're depressed, and they're losing their minds.
Yes, well, you know, I think that this corona has a lot to do with the value of our immune system.
Yes.
That's a big thing. You know, the coronavirus, it has to do with how our immune systems are functioning. And when you're not eating properly, the immune systems break down. I know that there's a big issue, like you just said, in the black community. And when I see this, I say it's the food we're eating. It's the fast food that has no nutrition. Everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a salad.
Yeah.
And then you look at the salad, and that dressing is rancid oils and sugar, and you know it's the wrong fat. And then you have doctors out there saying, "Don't eat fats. Your body, your brain is 90%
your brain needs
fat.
Yes,
90% fat. So why would you not feed your brain by feeding it good fats, not the rancid cooked stuff, but cold pressed oils, avocados, things like that." I mean,
absolutely.
Really, it makes all the difference. And it breaks my heart. Really, it does, Tyron, because, you know, we could be saving these communities.
Yes,
instead,
absolutely.
We have, you know, people investing in Monsanto.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Wrong direction to go in. But on a happier
note.
So
that's what my books are about. My books are about, you know, raw food nutrition. I wrote one on cellular anti-aging. One came off of my show, A Healthy You. So I took a compilation of all what the best doctors in the world were talking about alternative health. And then three books on raw nutrition, eating in the raw,
fantastic.
The raw 50 and easy, sexy, raw. And then I wrote two books on the modeling industry, which, frankly, today, they're obsolete. You know why? We don't have a modeling industry anymore. We have an influencer industry.
Yeah. It's all about being an influencer. It's unbelievable that the shift has happened. And it's all about how many followers you have. And that's why the Kardashians are on all the covers of magazines, because, you know, they have, what, a billion people following them collectively? So they all they have to do is grab their phone and go, oh, my God, I'm on Vogue, send, and a billion people see it.
But the odd thing is, though, all the stuff that they talk about is that people aren't buying off of what they, like, if you have a Mercedes because Mercedes is sponsoring, it doesn't mean people are going to go out and buy a Mercedes just because you're a Kardashian. Do you know what I mean? They're going to envy you that you're a Kardashian with a Mercedes, but they're not going to go buy a Mercedes.
But they're buying their makeup, though, because they're filthy rich now.
For sure.
Something is working.
Something is really working
over there in that camp.
I think Kris Jenner is a genius.
Isn't she a genius? She's my favorite Kardashian.
Mine, too.
She's my favorite,
She's the brains behind all of that.
Yeah, I love a brainy woman, you know?
Yeah, I do too.
So look, let's talk about Fashion Week, because you just made a huge comeback, and you've
what
done
fashion
several
week?
Shows. Well, you
there's
know,
no,
the Fashion
no
Week
fashion
that we
week
used
anymore.
To know. Look, we got the last and the best of it. We got the last of Fashion Week, all those front rows, all those wonderful pictures I have with you sitting next to you, and it was just, I'm excited.
Can I tell you something really odd that I,
yes.
that it just dawned on me while we were speaking, and I have to throw this out. Do you realize
please.
I was the first high-profile, high-fashion model who was on the covers of magazines on the front and had the back, had CoverGirl on it. I was
right.
the first high-fashion model that was doing shows, and I did it because they told me I was overexposed. Can you imagine anybody being overexposed today? Back then,
well,
I was overexposed, so they told me I have to take a break. They said maybe, you know, Ralph Lauren and Calvin Klein will hire you for a show. I did it for $700 for the show. Otherwise,
wow.
the shows were done on the girls who worked in the atelier. They worked in the
right.
showroom. And
exactly.
then we went from that to the height in the 90s. I remember
mm-hmm.
going to a Versace show, and it was...
Mm-hmm.
It was like a movie premiere. I've never seen anything like that, walking the red carpet to a Versace show. And then, you know, you come back to New York and the Luca Luca, the front row had everybody in the world. There were actors, there were politicians,
yeah.
there were developers, there were models,
mm-hmm.
there were ex-models.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went to the influencers in the front row. And
yeah.
the occasional model who was a friend of the designer, like some of the things I went to. And then
yeah.
I walked the last shows. I did Zhang Toy last September.
Yeah.
Then
mm-hmm.
in February, I did Dennis Basso. And yeah. then that was it. Coronavirus
yeah.
hit. Finished.
And we were like, we're all just sitting home. We will not have Fashion Week the way we knew it. It's completely... gone.
Well, I had dinner with Nicole Miller. I've had lunch mm-hmm. with Zhang Toy. I've talked
mm-hmm.
with Dennis Basso. I have
mm-hmm.
to tell you, none of them are doing
mm-hmm.
shows anymore. I mean, it would be
yeah.
that the influencers in the front row would shoot the show. They'd post it on their website. And then Zara and H&M would copy it cheaper and put it out the next week before the cycle of the actual designers
production.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I never understood that whole thing because, you know, I've been working for 25 years straight from my Scavullo days where he launched me in 94. And I just never understood the whole fascination with this influencer, with these people that have all of these fake followers. I mean, I'm really well known. I've done tons of covers and layouts. I mean, it within the thousands. And it's just... I'm shocked that I have 14,000 followers and this nobody from the Midwest has 1.5 million. Like, what is this influencer phenomenon and why is it they're able to push past these designers, all of the machine of fashion and push these fake followers that bump them up and put them in the front row?
Well, I have to tell you, this is a very big question, okay? What you've touched
yeah.
on is several things. You know, because I had 250,000 followers last summer, and
mm-hmm.
then Instagram went in and wiped out over half my followers.
Yeah, I lost followers, too. It's ridiculous.
But I lost over 100,000 followers
yeah.
in
yeah.
two
yeah.
weeks.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks. None of my friends lost any. Christy and Helena Christensen and... Linda Turlington, they lost nobody.
Mm-hmm.
So they were telling me they were bots. But I'm like, well, none of my friends lost anybody. But you could look and you could see when you look at people's Instagram,
mm-hmm.
you can see who's following them. And you could see how
right.
many followers who's following them has. And you could tell immediately who's a bot. But
yeah.
they're still counted as numbers. What is more important, actually, is engagement. If you've got 1 million followers, but you've got
mm-hmm.
like two people engaging, that means you've got mostly bots.
Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, that is an issue. And the issue is that they're not evenly cleaning out the bots. They're aiming, you know, for certain people or certain algorithms.
Yes. Yes,
and,
exactly.
And, you know, if they don't like what you're posting, they can do it. They can do whatever they want because basically it's a private company.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know it's really hard. I mean, and then to like, you know, I got up to 200,000 really quickly, and then they knocked me down to 100,000, and now it's been murder trying to get new followers, and I'm doing these great posts, me too, you know,
exactly.
Funny things, great things, you know, and then all of a sudden you get a guy out in L.A. who, you know, posts something, and all of a sudden he goes from 85 followers to 4.5 million. He just hits something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really amazing phenomenon. I got to say, it's an amazing phenomenon, this Instagram.
Yeah. And it's very lucrative for the ones that can navigate that thing and with bots and, you know, and slide under the radar and push their way to the front row and become a self-appointed authority. But it's a little kind of complicated because, you know, I was in the front row. And then the Instagram and social media people came. I got bumped to the third row. And then I made my way back up to the front row as a being a celebrity stylist and an influencer.
And then you got bumped to the back row. It's this dance.
And you're like, you're talking to your designers about what's going on here. What, you know, why am I getting dressed up, getting in a car service? And then you're surprising me and telling me I'm in the third row. You know, I don't get it.
Well, I pulled you into enough front rows with me. All you have to do is know somebody, you know?
Exactly. You got to know people in high places. So tell me about what's going on. You've been working. You have some films that are out. What is your latest film?
Well, that's so crazy. You know, I did a film last summer, which is going to be in this film festival that I'm going to. It's going to be actually the center of the film festival. You know, but it was a small part, a small cameo role, but I just finished a film that I was actually the female lead, and oddly enough, I shot it, Tyron, I shot it, and never saw any of my co-stars.
Really?
Yeah. Never saw anybody. I worked by myself.
That's weird.
Yes.
Okay.
It was really weird.
Were you like a woman locked in a room?
Well, more or less, yeah.
I was
playing a journalist. So basically, mm-hmm. the lead character sees me every day on television, and so that you know, mm-hmm. I'm shown every day, you know, talking and doing my show, and you keep wondering why this guy is absolutely obsessed with me, and you find out in the very last scene.
Okay.
Why he's obsessed.
Yeah, you can't say anything. Now we all want to watch it. So
yeah,
what is the name of the film?
It was called My Last Best Friend.
Okay.
And basically it's about Black Mass. You remember Whitey Bulger? Whitey Bulger was Black Mass. I think that Johnny Depp did a movie on it, and I think Leonardo DiCaprio did a movie on it with
Scorsese.
Yeah, I
recognize the name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The movie that Johnny Depp did was called Black Mass, and it's about this guy named Whitey Bulger, who was a Massachusetts gangster, basically, in the 70s and 80s, and he just, I mean, he killed everything. And what happened was he had this friend high up in the FBI mm-hmm. in Boston. A guy he grew up with who basically was protecting him because he was being fed information about other gangsters. So here's this gangster being protected by the FBI, feeding the FBI information about other gangsters and building his criminal empire because he's able to kill people and they're covering for him.
Wow.
It was an incredible movie. Anyway, this is after all that, Whitey Bulger mm-hmm. disappeared. And there was this huge FBI manhunt looking for him. And he had, I guess, you know, reworked his face and done all kinds of things. And they ultimately, you know, they caught him. So that you already know. But this was in the moment after the FBI was chasing him and they couldn't find him before they found him. That was this moment in the movie. And how he did it and what he did. to get away. So, yeah, okay. So basically I didn't see anybody.
Okay.
it was crazy because nobody's shooting, you know, with COVID going on, nobody's shooting.
Right, exactly. It's so, just making it so impossible to work. But
no, I know. Now L.A. is locked down again. So, you know, but the good thing
they can't insure us. That's the problem. What people don't know behind the scenes, because, you know, show business is a business. But you have to be insured to go on these sets, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they will not cover us. Our insurances will not cover us for COVID. So that's why we can't do anything. Our hands are all tied. We can't do big fashion productions or movies or TV shows. So until Hollywood entertainment and fashion figures out how to work around that, our hands are going to be tied for a while.
I think so, too. And L.A. being locked down was a step in the absolute wrong direction.
Yes.
I mean, it's you have to do it, but for the industry, it's like, wow, it's, you know, we're back to fighting COVID again.
Yeah, we're one. So look, you're packing. What people do not know that you're getting ready to jump on.
Am I being noisy?
No. I just want to hit all my notes to make sure I get it all in. No,
yes,
you're not
I'm
being
going
noisy
to the
at
film
all.
Festival, and Italy apparently has zero cases. Yes. So for a country that was really exploding with COVID to be having zero cases, that really gives me a lot of hope for us. You know.
But you're getting an award. You know, this is a wonderful time. You're getting
a Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about it, and you're probably going to have to give us an update after it's all done.
Absolutely.
What's going on? Tell me.
Well, so it's an international festival that's going to be held this year in Sardinia. I think Matt Dillon just opened the festival yesterday or the day before. So I'm going over for a few days to receive an International Women in Film Award, Achievement Award. So, yeah, that's super nice. I mean, it's always nice to be recognized for your work. But in reality, the best recognition for work is more work.
Absolutely.
As you know. We go from job to job in this business.
Job to job. It's like always being on a job interview forever.
Always being on a job interview, exactly. We're constantly auditioning.
Auditioning constantly. So you have a Fox. You have a Fox show.
Fox show. I was a Roger Ailes prodigy. You know, he brought me in. So when that all happened, I left with him. So
Okay. But you had your own name on a Fox show. This
oh yes, I had my own name on
a
show.
Deal.
You know what? The thing is, Tyrone, I told Roger at the time, I said, Roger, this is a very unique show for you guys to be doing. And he says, I would really like to try it because I did an alternative show. Mm-hmm. I did it on alternative health on Fox News, which was, by the way, conservative and, by the way, very political.
Very conservative and very political. Yeah.
So it was kind of crazy because everybody was like, oh, my God, like, what is she doing on air? I was doing liver cleanses and, you know, coffee enemas. And they were like,
exactly.
They thought I was crazy. But, you know, this was the beginning of the alternative movement. And then from there, you've got to understand that now every television show in the morning, every morning show has their moment of health, their health minute or their health blah, 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 whatever it is. So it was interesting because before I did that, nobody had it. I had my name on the show, A Healthy You with Carol Alt. And, you know, now everybody's got their healthy minute with their show. So it's interesting. And, you know, at least people are paying attention and they change.
And, you know, you've always been a trailblazer, you know, it's continued for the entirety of your career, which is wonderful to see. You're a woman that has, you know, kind of created her own path. You stuck to your convictions, and you created a business for yourself. And I know there's going to be more coming.
Honey, you know as well as I do, you have to be a chameleon and change with the times. Otherwise, you get left by the side of the road.
Absolutely.
And I'm not in this business for 41 years making a living by standing still or not being able to change.
You're the Cher of fashion, and I'm the Madonna of fashion. You got to keep changing and moving with the times. You know what I mean?
And you're just voguing on through.
You're voguing on through. So speaking of voguing and modeling, let's just talk about Sports Illustrated for a minute, because you had one of the most successful covers. And I don't know if you heard the announcement, but they are going to be featuring their first transgender model. Her name is Valentina Sampaio.
Yes, I heard.
Yes, so let's talk about that. What do you think about having the first transsexual, transgender model on the pages?
You know, Tyron, you know that in 1970s and 60s and mm-hmm. 70s and 80s, that mm-hmm. being gay was the most difficult thing that could ever happen to someone. You know, you weren't covered by insurance if you got sick. Your partner mm-hmm. couldn't take over your home. We raised yeah. money, you know, hair cares raised money for hairdressers and makeup artists in our industry who got sick and who weren't being taken care of so that they could pay their bills. So you exactly. know as well as I do where we yeah. came from.
Yeah.
A lot of people Absolutely. Today have no idea where we came from and how much we've changed and how much we've yeah. advanced and how
yeah.
much bigger our understanding has been. And this, for me, is the physical proof of how much we've changed. I
Absolutely.
Think it's, I got goosebumps. I think it's amazing. You know, all my friends are gay. Everybody, mm-hmm. all my good mm-hmm. friends are gay. All the people I hang with are gay or transsexual or transvestite. That is my neighborhood. And,
yes.
you know, for me, anytime there's a leap or a bound, I am ecstatic about it because I know the trouble. My very first yes. friend, Vincent Nessa, was a makeup artist. He did my Life magazine Miss Piggy photo and the first $1 million face. When Life mm-hmm. magazine picked me as the first $1 million, he did the makeup for that. And I remember him telling me, he said, Carol, I have a gay cancer. I'm like, Vincent, what do you mean a gay cancer? Is a cancer only gay people get? Like, how can only this cancer only yeah. strike gay people?
That's what they were calling it back then.
Right.
Gay cancer, yes.
It was AIDS. Mm-hmm. It was yeah. the very beginning. And they had no help, nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, once you got that diagnosis, nobody would come near you. You couldn't even rent yeah. your apartment anymore. So
yeah.
to go from that to the understanding we have today, to the acceptance yeah. that we have yeah. today is, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I am so happy about it. And for Sports Illustrated to be that wide open is
yeah.
just beyond, because it only gives us another step forward into understanding each other and helping each other and making
exactly.
this world a better place. You know, when you said before about how in the black community, this COVID virus is more rampant and wiping people out. And
yeah.
I'm saying to you, I think it's nutrition. I think we've got to teach people how to eat. We've
yeah.
got to allow them to earn enough of a living that they can buy themselves good food and take care of themselves.
Absolutely.
I, for one, know how expensive it is to have to, you know, once you get sick, to be healthy again and to not want to be in the system. So
yeah.
why get sick? If it's just
yeah.
food, if it's just a matter of education and teaching people
Absolutely.
How to eat properly so they build their immune system so it doesn't wipe out a community. I mean,
Absolutely.
I'm here. I'll help. I'll teach. I lecture. I'll do it
yeah.
for free.
Yeah, yeah. And with these beautiful books, you have an opportunity to teach the world, because one-on-one is a little, you know, taxing, and that's why, you know, we look forward to people of your position and stature in life and platform to put your thoughts down in a beautiful book, and which is just attainable by everybody who's interested in
yes,
learning.
Yes, they're in the library.
A better
Go
way.
To the library and get
Go
it.
To
Don't
the
you
library.
Don't even have to buy it. Go to the library. I mean, when I donate
Here
money
you
to
are.
Alternative cancer research from
right.
my book. So these were a labor
right.
of love.
Wonderful. So you millennials, you hear this, right? Go to the library, pick it up. If you really love it and you want to donate some money, buy the book, and you know where the money is going to.
Yeah, so, my cameos go to helping animal rescue, and my books go to alternative cancer research.
I have a couple more questions, and then we'll be wrapping it up. But I want to jump back to the Gianni Versace, because going to be on the cover. We're working on the cover now. We're going to probably use the Versace dress. But you told me such a beautiful story about when you met Gianni. Can you share that with the audience?
Well, it wasn't when I met Gianni, because I met Gianni, you know, the very, very beginning of my career. In like 1980, 81, 82, I walked his show. But in the mid 90s, Armani had an event at the Armory on Lexington Avenue and 23rd Street. And I remember being invited to the event, and it was a great cocktail party in honor of Armani's 25th year or whatever it was. And as I walked out, I was with my, my manager, and I'm standing talking with her, and suddenly, out of the darkness comes Gianni, and he comes right up to me and says, "Carol, darling," he says, "I know that Gianfranco Ferre dresses you, but truthfully, anything you ever need, if you ever need anything, please, you must ask to me, because it would be my absolute pleasure to dress you." And then I said, "Thank you so much. Absolutely." And he walked away, and I stood there like, I think my mouth was hanging open, and I turned in a slow pan to my manager, and I looked at her and I said, "Oh my God, that was Gianni Versace offering to dress me."
Wow.
He was just a generous, beautiful soul in a business where, by the way, not always nice people make it.
Tell the truth, yes. But he was really such a nice man, and that's why I chose his dress to be on the cover. We're working on it now. Hopefully everything is going to fall into place. And, of course, I'm going to shoot you the image over so you can take a look at it and okay it before we...
Yeah, because we shot so many pictures that day, Ken, and we did a couple of Versace pieces. So I just would love to see
which one. Yeah, I think we did like three. So, yeah, we have three to choose from. So I want to ask you one little fun question before we wrap it up. Do you have a celebrity crush?
Oh my God, no. I don't have any celebrity crush. Can you imagine? I think if it was anybody, it would probably be Reese Witherspoon. Only because, you know, she just great. You know, I love her new movies. I love what she picks. I love what she's all about. I love how she's moved on and become a producer. I love what she produces. Yeah, I would love to work with her. I mean, I would die to work with her. So that's my celebrity crush, because it's more about, you know, the business end, because that's more of what I'm about. In terms of guys, no, you know, the love of my life died many years ago, and you know, from then on, it's been very difficult. But, you know, she would be my celebrity crush for sure. If you interview her in person, I'm coming with you. Okay. If you interview her for your podcast, I'm coming with you.
It's a deal. We'll make it a date.
Absolutely.
We'll make a nice truple, wouldn't we? We'll make a nice truple. So what's next for Carol Alt?
You know, that's the big question. You know, I always moved on to new and different things, because there was always the need for it. You know, necessity is the mother of invention, for sure. That's why I did the posters, the calendars, the videos. I moved on into movies. I did books. I did television shows. But now it's like, you know, I'm looking around and I'm wondering, where is there a need? That's always where I find the vacuum. And since nature abhors a vacuum like I do, I fill that space. You know, when nobody understood about health and nutrition, I filled that space. You know, when I see an issue with animals being treated badly, I fill that space. So I'm looking, Tyron. If you see any space that you think would work for me, let me know. You know, because I'm enjoying my movies still. Of course, I still want to put out some products that I believe can change people's lives and their health. That's super important to me. But, you know, I'm in a moment of transition. And, you know, with coronavirus, it's hard to know what the new world is going to look like. So it's kind of a little bit of a black hole.
Well, I see, for me, because sometimes you can see things when you're looking at someone rather than when they're trying to find.
Yeah, when they're looking out instead of looking in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see that what you're doing and a few of the ladies from your generation, that you're redefining beauty for women
aging.
Of a particular age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, when you see J-Lo at the Super Bowl spinning on that stripper pole at 50, 50's not what 50 used to be, you know? 50 back in the 80s was the golden girl. 50s in 2020 is J-Lo spinning down the stripper pole. So,
honey,
you know,
I am looking at that, 60.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and look at you. You're 60, and when people see these pictures, I mean, they're not overly retouched. I don't want anybody to think that we are doing things to your body or anything like that. Sometimes we hit a little or a corner and here and there, but we don't. We try to show the woman, you know, and not just the magic of computers. And you look absolutely incredible. You know, your body is amazing. I'm hoping that the people at Sports Illustrated want to celebrate you at 60. Let's just put that in the universe and maybe give you a beautiful cover, a layout or something. But I think you're redefining what it means to be 60 and aging today in this generation.
Well, I like to say I haven't made the cut. meaning
yes.
I'm turning 60 and I haven't made the cut. I've not had
absolutely.
Any facial surgery.
Absolutely. And people don't know that. And I'm glad you're saying that because, you know, I wanted people to know that when they see the pictures, it's all your hair. There's no pieces in there. No surgery, no plastic surgery, anything like that. And, you know, look, it's incredible what you were able to achieve and becoming such an inspiration, a walking inspiration, a walking billboard for, you know, everything that you are about. And I think that that's something there you want to probably focus on because there is, I don't know how you're going to package it and put it in a pill or, you know, in a book cover, but there's something there.
Thank you, honey. I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for interviewing me for your podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. This is a huge wow factor for me. I'm super excited. And everybody, just make sure you jump over to Carol Off Instagram, and it's model Carol Off. And you got to definitely check out her.
Tuesday. Yeah, my website at carolalf.com.
There you have it. Take care.
Take care.
Supermodel and actress Carol Alt is featured on the cover of Agenda Magazine's Winter 2021 issue number 14, titled Comfy Cozy. Be sure to purchase your copy of Agenda Magazine, available right here at agendamag.com. I'm Tyron Mays, and you're listening to the Fashion Whisperer podcast, and I'll meet you here for the next issue of Agenda Magazine. You're listening to Good For You by THBD.